Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with Kavi and Benjamin, as always. And this week we are doing one of our episodes of Space for Good. And we are highlighting someone who is doing space or something in the science world that is for a good cause. And so this week we brought on the astronaut wrangler, Christina Korp, who just in the first segment told us about this, you know, like all blasé. She's like, yeah, I was, you know, rock and roll and I did all these things and musician and blah, blah, blah. And then I decided to just, you know, manage Buzz Aldrin's life, like, you know, as one does. I do think what's really interesting, I've worked in SciComm enough now and I've met many other people in both the SciComm world and then like people who work at NASA or in, you know, the private space sector. A lot of us do have backgrounds in both music, because I actually started my undergrad in music performance, and also diving. Like diving is also, yes, a very, yeah, Benjamin, I'm sorry, you need to get on it. But that was, Kavi actually inspired me to get my certification after I saw him get certified. And I remember reaching out to him and saying, like, you know, like, what was your experience like and stuff like that? And he said the same thing. He was like, the first time it was kind of terrible. Like the first time down was slightly terrifying. And I will tell you, I've had two now major panic attacks, just attempting to go down, because I live in the Midwest and we get to dive in, you know, these dirty, muddy lakes. And there's something about these dark, cold lakes that my brain is like, nope, 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 nope. This is death. No. And I had one this summer, actually. And I've dove, oh my gosh, at least 200 times now. You know, like I dive a lot. And yeah, my boyfriend owns a scuba shop. So it's kind of like what happens when, yeah. But I still have my moments where I freak out. And so that was why I reached out to you. I don't remember. I think I just left a message generally and where I was like, don't worry. Like,
yeah, it'll be fine. Yeah.
It'll be okay. So tell us, I remember you having that first bad day, but then you said that the next day it went a lot better, right?
Yeah. Well, the first day, so I was doing okay. You know, I was passing all the tests. I was okay. What was really bothering me was flooding my mask. That was freaking mm-hmm. me out. Mm-hmm. And I realized, you know, how some people are a mouth breather. I am a yeah. nose breather. And so it was really hard for me to turn my nose off and not keep inhaling water. So that was part of it. And then when I finally was kind of like getting my head around that and going down in the water, then my ear, I was struggling to get my ears cleared. And they, you know, they would tell me to pinch my nose with my fingers and then like, you know, kind of blow to clear them. And what that was doing was letting water into my mask every time.
Oh, no.
And so, and then I would inhale it and then that would freak me out. And then so I wasn't clearing my ears and my ears were killing me. My left ear was killing me. So I actually at one point was like at the bottom of this spring and I was probably, I don't know, maybe 18 feet down. And my ear was just killing me. So I inflated my BC and I just shot straight to the surface. He just came up and yelled at me and said, no, we got to go back down. And, yeah. And so after that, I didn't stay much longer. And I was just like, I just can't quit inhaling this water. And it was driving me nuts. And then that's when I talked to Nicole Stott on my way home. I called her saying, this isn't going so great. I'm not sure it's going to work out. I can't quit breathing out of my nose. I just keep inhaling water, you know, and then I said, and I'm, you know, this is terrifying, like to go underwater. And then she's like, oh, I know what you mean. That's how I feel. And yeah. then it wasn't just Nicole, even Cyan Proctor said, oh God, yeah, I have the same problems. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. These ladies both scuba dive all the time and they still have this problem. And that's when I thought, okay, maybe I could figure out how to do this. And so the funny thing is the next day I figured out how to clear my ears just by kind of clenching my teeth. Mm-hmm. And not having to touch my mask. And that just made all the difference then to where mm-hmm. I didn't have to touch my mask and let the water in. And then everything was much better. But when I went in the Maldives, the funny thing is like, everybody's like, wow, you look so chill. This is your first time. Wow. You look so natural. And I mean, inside, I was feeling like, I'm still terrified. Yeah.
Yeah.
I not yeah. look like it, but still terrified, but, yep. but I went diving three times in the Maldives and it was, and I'll just, one last thing I'll say is the third dive was actually the coolest and we were kind of going into a little cave and that's where my brain was like, going to a new cave, going into a cave. And I started like, rising and hitting the ceiling. And then it was just an immediate, you know, out. But the funny thing is my mask like fogged up, and the dive master came over and kept telling me like to put my face down and then shake, you know, and I didn't know what he meant. And what he meant was to put water in my mask to like a little bit to help.
Yep.
So, and then it cleared up and I was like, oh wow, I thought this was a murky water. I just couldn't see. but like, wow, this is amazing. This is the Maldives.
Right.
But the other thing I would tell you, I was saying like flooding my mask was, oh my God, it was just so hard. But the funny thing is when I had to do the testing and take the mask off and prove that I could put it back on, cause I wear contacts. So I had to keep my eyes closed. Like the last time I did it, my mask got caught in my hair and I had it braided and I couldn't get it untangled from my hair.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding, like a couple minutes, like trying to get this thing with no mask on and that's when I put that back on and then cleared it. And the guy goes, how come you can do that and you can't find your mask?
You didn't panic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I was going to say, I'm impressed you didn't panic. Yeah.
Yeah, that part was easier than flooding my mask. I think it's because you're seeing the water, you know, go up to your eyelids and that's, you know.
Well, you're not alone with the mask flooding thing. I'm sure, Kavi, you struggle with that too. And actually, I tell people there's actually an evolutionary reason that we freak out with that, because we have kind of receptors in our nose cheekbone area here that when water hits it, there's a part of your brain that's like, ah! Like, I'm going to drown. You know, it's like a protective mechanism. So it does trigger a little part of your brain to go into a survival mode. And you have to consciously override that and be like, no, it's okay. I'm not drowning. But there is something that when water hits our face, our brains have so it's sort of like touching a hot stove, you know, the same thing. Like you have a reflex that's faster than you can control. I always think very science-based. And so for me, to get over my
reason,
There's a science reason for everything. And so for me, that's how I work through things. It doesn't seem to always help everybody else, but I try to always remind people like, don't worry, this is natural. This is normal. Your body is just trying to like not let you die. So,
I'm not as much of a coward as I thought. So that's good.
There you go. See? Science.
I love this. I think that one of the things that, I was going to ask you in general, if you thought that there was like a particular difference in, you know, helping wrangle astronauts from the Apollo era versus astronauts, you know, from the shuttle era more recently. And I think that it kind of connects to what we're talking about, which is this idea of humanizing the experience, right? And being able to talk to Nicole about the fact that she still struggles with certain things. So it's not like, you know, I feel like, when we think about maybe Buzz and Neil, we're picturing these kind of demigods who did these incredible feats that nobody ever thought were possible before. And now it's like, you know, I also struggle with scuba diving. I also get freaked out in situations, and it's about how to cope with that, right? Does that kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, so the funny thing is, because I came from the rock star world, I mean, I was literally like hanging out with Aerosmith and people like that. And I... And I was like singing on stages for between 200,000 people. I was doing gigantic concerts. So when I met Buzz, I was just like, here's an old dude. and I wasn't dazzled by him. And to be honest, I think that's why it worked out so well, because I didn't grow up with these guys on my wall. They, to me, they were just, you know, he was some name I knew. And when I met him, he looked like a sweet old man. And then I learned very quickly he was a bull in a china shop.
The main right hook.
Yeah. Actually, my dad, the first time my dad met him was 2 weeks after I started working for him. And my dad said, I heard you beat some guy up. And Buzz said, no, it was more like a one punch. I think, first of all, I didn't really realize what I was getting myself into. I didn't realize how... I knew he was an icon, but it was just different than actually hanging out with an icon and then having Neil Armstrong call him and Michael Collins call him and having these people congratulate me on this, you know. But I think the reason that and all the Apollo astronauts welcomed me really quickly into their circle. And I think it's because I wasn't in awe of them. I was just thinking they're a bunch of old dudes who went to space. And so I think that's why they really quickly welcomed me in, because I didn't treat them like, oh my gosh, they're untouchable. I was just treated them like a bunch of old Fly Guys, and I got to be in the room when they would like make fun of each other and they would rib each other and they would, you know. So the funny thing now is I've had people say to me, oh, astronauts are the elite humans. I'm like, no, they're not. They're just as flawed as the rest of us. But the thing I admire about astronauts, and I say this all the time, is that they're willing to take the risk. They don't give up. They keep trying. You know, they have this hunger to keep pushing, you know, and that's the thing that really sets astronauts, and not just astronauts, by the way, people in space in general, I think, you know. And so, you know, comparing the Apollo astronauts to the younger ones, I mean, or the next generation ones, I mean, definitely even the younger astronauts in the next generation look at the Apollo guys as, you know, they're the top, they're the gods of space, you know. That being said, they also kind of sometimes don't, some astronauts of like the shuttle era and the newer era haven't liked doing events with the Apollo astronauts because they really get outshined by the Apollo astronauts.
You know? Sure.
I can imagine.
The attention's on the Apollo astronauts, but even if they idolized them. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I will say this. Look, Nicole Stott is a dream to work with of all the astronauts. She's wonderful. If you've ever met her, she's literally down to earth. Yes, I know that.
Pun intended.
Yeah. And she's wonderful. And I just love her dearly. And I mean, Cyan too, you know, I call all of these ladies my space sisters, you know, they're really, mm-hmm. There's an interesting kindred kind of relationship between the female astronauts that is different than the guys. The guys, there's the camaraderie, but with the women, there's this unity that's different.
Sure.
And that's not to say the guys are bad or anything, but it's definitely women each other out in a way that's really interesting. So do they need wrangling? I mean, I joke about wrangling Nicole and she'll say, I'm the wrangled astronaut, you know, but she's actually a dream to work with. Now, Buzz, I mean, I have said when I started calling myself the astronaut wrangler, some people really were offended by that. Some people probably still are, to be honest. But the funny thing is that the astronauts all think it's hilarious. So I feel like as long as the astronauts are cool with it,
yeah,
I'm still going to be the astronaut wrangler because they all know it is not, they're not, it's not like, oh, come on, guys, let's go. It's like, come on, let's go.
Do they need that much prodding? You know, like yes. over here.
Yeah, it's like, now, not 5 minutes ago, now.
And I love how you call Nicole your partner in purpose. I think that's such an intentional phrase. I think it's very a very clever way to connect your kind of your cause, but then you know, kind of give her that equal footing. Even though you call yourself the astronaut wrangler, it's not like you're the big PR. She's your partner in purpose, and I really jumped out at me actually when I was doing some research on your organization and stuff. Benjamin, I know, has some questions because he told me he had a little list running, so I want to give him a chance to shoot his shot. Come on.
What? Okay.
Come on, right now. Come on. I'm the radio host wrangler. Come on, let's go.
Right. Well, going along with how all the astronauts, everyone has them up on this pedestal, but you got to know them as, you know, real just people. Some of the questions I have are a bit silly. Like, which one's the funniest? Which one has the worst table manners? That kind of question.
I can answer that.
I would love to hear this. I would absolutely love to hear
this. The funniest is definitely Michael Collins. He was hilarious, so funny, such a dry wit, really quick. And I mean, everyone would agree about that. And Buzz even talked about on their way to the moon. I mean, he just would crack them up. We did a Quaker Oats commercial about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It only aired in the UK, by the way. I don't know why. But they found this audio of where, you know, they would get the news read to them every day from Mission Control. And they said, oh, we found today this Irishman won the porridge eating contest with 23 bowls of oatmeal. And Michael Collins is like, I think we need to enter Aldrin next time. He's on his 19th bowl. know, he was always like making jokes, you know, like that. And even among all the Apollo guys, he was just so funny. I loved him. And then as far as who has the worst table manners, I'd definitely say Buzz for sure. Yeah, that's why often I had to clean up after him. Actually, one time I yelled at him at one of my Christmas parties. because he'd always come to my Christmas parties and people would be like, holy crap, is that Buzz Aldrin? And when I first moved to Florida and I was in my house, he got a big bowl of salsa and he sat down on my brand new couch.
Oh no,
get off of my couch right now, you know better than that. And people were like, I can't believe you just yelled at Buzz Aldrin. I said, he knows better than that.
Oh, I love that. Well, we're gonna take another break, and I'm sure we have plenty more to talk about and plenty more questions, because I feel like we've just started talking to you, and that's what I told you, like, it does not take long to fill up these 15 minutes for us. We will come right back after this break and continue to talk to Christina Korp, the self-proclaimed astronaut wrangler who has lots of great stories about some of the... I love that it's also to you. You're like, these are just a bunch of old men that, like, went to space. like as one does. And you're just dropping, like, and I was there with Aerosmith, as one does. You know, like... So we'll continue talking with Christina when we return. You are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.